Hello and welcome to the Plight of the Karen People podcast. I am your host, Zane, or Gabamu. Today we are excited to have an interview with my good friend McKay, and I hope you enjoy it, and thank you. Okay.
Hey, I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing really good. It's good to see you. It's good to talk to you. So, yeah. I guess we'll just jump right into some questions here. So, the first one here is, how do you know the Karen people?
I first came to know the Karen people by serving in a community of Karen people. Doing some humanitarian work in St. Paul, Minnesota.
We actually worked a lot together, and it was really cool to. Yeah. We spent a lot of time learning Karen and like working together. We didn't like each other. We figured out we could get along. And yeah, the Karen people have kind of unified us, I guess we could say.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, Karen people do that for a lot of people. It seems like.
For sure. So, how do you feel about like their situation? Like what do you feel about like how they're going through things right now?
You know, Zane, I think we can all say anyone that knows anything about Karen people and their current situation, you know, they could say that they definitely don't deserve to be in the situation they are. I mean, they've been in a civil war that's lasted for over 70 years. That's included a lot of ethnic cleansing and a lot of horrible things against Karen people. And it's just gone on too long.
I totally agree. It's a total disaster over there. So, but like, why do you think the normal person should care about Karen people, and why do you think they should want to help them?
Well, I think it really comes down to us all being humans and each having a responsibility to help each other and other people who are suffering, whether that be at home or abroad. You know, even the normal person listening to the podcast that really, you know, has no responsibility whatsoever to necessarily help anyone in a different country, seeing the amount of suffering and how long it's been going on, I think makes it really relevant to each of us.
Yeah, totally agree, man. So we're going to jump in here a little bit deeper. We can go, what is the Burmese government doing to the ethnicities inside of Myanmar?
That's a great question, and honestly, one that is pretty skewed by the news and different reporters and different opinions of different governments and countries. But for the most part, I would say it's really what's the word I'm looking for. Most people agree, and see the horrible things that the Burmese government and military specifically is doing to the Karen people, both civilians and their military force as well. To put it short, though, they have committed multiple crimes against the Karen military and people as a whole, war crimes, and ultimately what's kind of happening is they want to get rid of Karen people as a race. I mean, it's really similar to Hitler's ethnic cleansing. Yes. In a lot of ways, you know, Burmese people, and this, you know, this isn't saying anything about the Burmese, you know, ethnicity as a whole. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, for the most part, you know, as a governmental view and military actions go, you know, they're trying to get rid of the Karen race, and that just includes, you know, everything from killing the most innocent Karen civilians to raping women and children and burning down their villages and their crops. You know, so there's a lot a lot that they're doing, but I mean, those are some of the worst things that are happening.
Yeah, it's awful the things that are happening in there. I've heard so many stories of people women being raped for no reason, just to demean the Quran ethnicity, pretty much, and just trying to wipe them out of the history books and everything.
Yeah, what you said there about wiping them out of the history books is a really important point. There's a Burmese leader at one point that said, you know, in a certain amount of time, Quran people will just be a race that you see in the museums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not cool. And like, it's completely just trashed their confidence in their ability to just become who they want to become. But if we go back to the beginning, and how did this war even start? Like, what started this war?
Well, during the middle of World War II, in 1942, the Japanese invaded Burma, and they were able to do this pretty easily because the Burmese ethnicity and government helped the Japanese actually invade their own country, ironically. And they did this kind of because of their situation. At the time, the colonial government of Britain was the power in Burma, and Quran people were the majority of the leadership in that government. And Burmese people did not like that whatsoever because they kind of believed they were the chosen race in a lot of ways, and the more powerful one. And so when Japan came and invaded Burma, they saw that as an opportunity to get these Quran people out of power and out of government. And so eventually the Japanese occupation ended in 1945, and they began, the Burmese rose up to power as a result of the help that the Japanese gave them, and they began systematically killing the Quran people. But, you know, as anyone would do, the Quran people didn't want to stand for that. And so they took up arms and began fighting back. And ethnic cleansing turned into a civil war. And that civil war has gone on for over 70 years now, starting in 1949.
Yeah, it's been going on for so long. It's almost like ridiculous at how long and how many ceasefires have been signed and how many other things have been just trying to stop the war, but they just can't seem to do it. The war will not stop for these Quran people.
Yeah, it's unfortunate how long it's been going on, and it's called the longest running civil war in the whole world, and most people still don't have any idea what it is or what's happening.
Yeah, that's why it's important that people should know about this.
Exactly.
And what are some of the things that you've heard have like happened to individual Quran people that like maybe you know, or maybe people you've talked with, but like what are some things that you've heard that have happened to them?
You know, and I think you have a lot to say on this too, Zane, just with both of our experience in being able to have relationships with Quran people and speaking their language has given us a really good opportunity to hear some really personal and devastating stories about what have happened to some families and individuals. And, you know, I would say just kind of a collective experience that I've heard all around from each Quran individual that I've talked to is they ran when they had to. They never planned to leave their village, you know, at any given moment. They didn't have, you know, food storage that they had built up, you know, 72-hour kit that they, you know, had to bring with them when you know, the crap went down, because they just lived day-to-day lives, and you know, they picked the vegetables that they were going to eat that day. They killed the chickens that they were going to eat that day. You know, they had no expectations of what was going to happen tomorrow, and so, you know, one day or another, for each Quran family that I spoke to in America, at least, they were all refugees. So each of them had a story of hearing bullets flying through their village, seeing their neighbors' houses caught on fire. Mm-hmm. Their crops caught on fire, their animals killed, and what choices did they have? I mean, each person just told me that the choices that they had were to stay and die and see their children killed and their wives raped, or to leave. And when they would leave, there's an article that I read that talked about how the military has laid down, reportedly, you know, probably a lot higher than 2,000 landmines over the whole entire north-south line of Thailand and Burma, which are all put there for the pure purpose of stopping civilians from being able to get away from their villages. And so they leave this really bad situation and then either step on a landmine and get most of their family killed or lose a limb, or they end up going back to their village at some point that's completely burned down. So yeah.
I know I don't think I've met a single Karen person who hasn't lost something in a camp from the Burmese army. I know Karen, if you see a Karen person walking around and missing a leg, I can tell you it's not from a disease or it's not from being born that way. It's from a landmine blowing them up or some mortar being tossed into their normal refugee camp, their normal just village one day in Burma, and then all of a sudden it's no longer there anymore. Like
they're all war veterans in a lot of ways.
They all are. They all have many people have lots of like severe PTSD and other issues that are like, that's because of the atrocities that are happening inside of Burma and these wicked Burmese people just not stopping at anything to just remove them. I know I've heard stories, the worst stories are the ones when the Karen people are caught by the Burmese soldiers as like prisoners, or like I've heard a story of a woman who was caught and then she had to watch them kill her brother or her husband. Just these awful things happening. And it's not doing anything good to help the people at that time. But why don't you think the war has stopped yet? Or,
you know, there are certainly a lot of possible answers to that question. Over 70 years, you know, there could be a lot of possible times that someone could have stepped in and stopped it, a big world power. But I think there's two possible solutions that I would say, from my personal experience, what little personal experience I have, that I believe would personally help the Karen people and their situation get better in months. I mean, and the first one is ultimately the people becoming aware of the situation. I think the amount of unawareness of the longevity and intensity of the war happening, the civil war and the ethnic cleansing happening in Myanmar on the Karen people, is honestly one of the greatest weaknesses that the Karen people have on their side. I mean, the fact that most of the world really has no idea what a Karen person is, yeah, who the Karen people are, what the civil war in Myanmar is. Most people I've talked to don't even know where Myanmar is. They say true. What? Or they say Korean people. And, mm-hmm. You know, and obviously that's, you know, that's just kind of the way it is because they are such a small country and really doesn't have a big impact on us as Americans or any other countries around the world. And so I'd say, you know, why won't the war stop? Why hasn't it stopped for the past 70 years? Because people are unaware, and second, because people don't see immediate effects on their own personal lives.
Yeah, it's true. No one knows what Karen people. I'm the same. I didn't know who they were until I met him in St. Paul. Never heard of them. Never even hardly heard of Myanmar. I didn't know where Myanmar was. And then all of a sudden, it's like become super important to like me and other people. Anyone who meets them feels this urge to like help out in their situation. So yeah, I definitely agree with everything you said there. So who do you think would have the biggest impact if they decided to help out the Quran people?
Well, definitely the United Nations. Yes. I think ultimately, obviously, in my personal opinion, America.
Yeah. I think so too.
If America stepped in, and took official governmental action to help the Quran people in the situation, I think that would end it the quickest. But ultimately, I mean, the question really is not just how can we end it the quickest. The question is, how can we end it and keep it ended for the longest?
Very true.
And so I think when it comes to that, it's really the United Nations that needs to step in. Their one mission, it talks about on their website, their one central mission is to keep peace, to establish peace, and to help countries who are in conflict create peace in their own country. And so if that is their one central mission, if it's actually what they do every single day, then I think 70 years of civil war and ethnic cleansing is a great place to start.
I totally agree. And, I don't think they couldn't start any place better. Like, that's a disaster in there.
I completely agree. And you know, the reason that they haven't yet, there's a lot of reasons, but I think the main one is just the Burmese military and government has found a lot of ways to just barely slip out of the hands of the law. And unfortunately, there's a lot of laws and a lot of different protocols that could be changed to catch them in those laws. But ultimately, kind of the broad answer to that is yes, to have the United Nations act in unison to stop the attacks on the Quran people and stop this ethnic cleansing that's happening.
Yeah, I totally agree. The UN would have a very big impact if they just stepped in and just said, okay, we're sick of this. The Burmese government is really, really good at smoothing things over. Oh, we're just building roads. That's what they're doing now. We're just building roads, helping Burma be more first world, be more ready and up to tier with everyone else. But in reality, they're just building roads so they can get rid of the Quran people. They're really good at secretly hiding what their true intentions are. Yeah. So another question that I have is, what are some groups that are helping the Quran situation inside of Burma?
There's been a few organizations over the past couple of years that have really stepped up and helped. And one of those that I've seen at least is Project CARE is a big one. They go to Burma. They mainly go to the Thailand refugee camps and provide education and medicine. That's not necessarily stopping the conflict, but it is providing a lot of things to kind of reverse the effects of what's happening from the conflict on the Quran people. So I think that's a really important one to mention.
I think they give a lot of hope to Quran people.
And I think that's equally as important in a lot of ways to, to stopping the war itself. Mm-hmm. But another really big one that, many of you might have seen in the movie Free Burma Rangers is the Free Burma Rangers. And I think you have a lot to say on them, Zane.
The Free Burma Rangers are a really cool group of, it's just one guy and his wife, and they decided to just go to Burma because he heard there was conflict there. He was a trained Army Special Forces guy, and he decided to go, and he just went, and he's taught all these different groups of people to help go on recon missions inside of Burma into the, they would go after the Burmese army would swipe through and destroy a village. The Free Burma Rangers would come in afterwards and provide help and provide medical assistance to those who wouldn't have got it anyways. They had just lied there suffering and died. But the Free Burma Rangers have brought lots of hope and lots of support. And they also fight against the Burmese army directly and sometimes too. So they are a really good example of getting like the news and like finding what's important and then sending it off. They've done a lot of that. They've like recorded lots of the atrocities that have happened and say, hey, here's your ceasefire. This is not a ceasefire. We just walked into a destroyed village. And like that's what they've done really well is help the press see what was happening inside of Myanmar.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you talked about Project CARE doing a lot to build hope for Karen people in a lot of ways. But Free Burma Rangers is there to really show what hope looks like. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really crucial and something that the UN, you know, would offer thousands of people to support that situation, peacekeepers that would help the Free Burma Rangers actually accomplish their mission.
Yeah, another thing that's really cool about the Free Burma Rangers is that they're actually Karen people doing it. Like, it's not just the white guy leads it, but in reality, it's the Karen people like going out and doing it. It's not some foreign person. It's them. It's their own ethnicity helping themselves out, which is really cool. What have you heard about the IRC helping out?
So the IRC is the International Relief Committee, and they are, I mean, probably one of the biggest relief and refugee service committees in the world. And they've done a lot to help Karen refugees, kind of like Project CARE in the refugee camps, and a lot. They've done a lot of work in Myanmar itself as well. And I think those are kind of the organizations, Project CARE, Free Burma Rangers, and the IRC that we can feel confident donating our time and our money to. And that's kind of one of the point that we wanted to make, focusing on those kind of organizations, because we talk about the most important, the most effective, longest lasting solution that can be made is for the United Nations to act, right? But that's a lot longer process and something people are working on and needs a lot more support too. But ultimately, the second biggest solution is what can we do personally? What can we do as individuals to help? And that's where these organizations come in, because they are doing a lot. And if you can't donate your time to go over and help Karen refugees in Myanmar or Thailand, you can certainly help fund those people who do have the time to do that. And IRC is just another great example of providing medicine, education, food, clothing to Karen people in need.
Those are definitely organizations that like we can trust, and I would definitely trust spending a lot of time and money helping these specific organizations.
Yes, yeah. Same here.
Yeah. So what do you think that the normal person listening to this podcast can do to help out Karen people?
So like I was just talking about, it's a pretty big thing to be able to get the United Nations to act. I mean, we're talking about multiple different countries around the world here that we would have to address, and you know, we could probably get, you know, the 10 or 20 people listening on this podcast to go out to the White House and protest, and I'd be down for that. I'd be there, trust me. But I think we all know what's going to be the most effective is to start in our community and start where we can. And so I think those who are listening to this podcast, who feel inspired to help the Karen people and relieve some of the suffering that they're experiencing right now, they can start by first continuing to listen to the podcast, continuing to educate themselves on the Karen people and their suffering, their needs. What fuels service more than anything? It's passion.
Yeah.
It's a desire to help, and the only way to get that desire is to know what they're actually going through. Go find a Karen person closest to your local community. Find a family that could use some help. Figure out how you can help them. Reach out to one of us here on the podcast if you need help interpreting. We're happy to help. There's a lot of people who are more available and happy to help than you might think. And second, take time to figure out what you can donate to these organizations mm-hmm. that we've talked about. The Free Burma Rangers, International Rescue Committee, and Project CARE. We'll put some links in the description, probably, Zane, mm-hmm. right?
Awesome.
For these organizations, so you can just find them pretty easily and go on there, check them out, and see what you can personally do to help. I'd say is the best place to start.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that just educating yourself and meeting Karen people and talking to them, whether it be through their children or whether it be through other interpreters or other things, talking to Karen people and understanding their situation is the biggest reason, and it gives you the biggest reason to help other people, is just knowing someone. If you don't know them, you can't help them. If you don't know, that's why I think it's just really important to meet Karen people, spend time with them, and do what you can do to bless and help these people's lives.
And you'll find that, I mean, I'm sure you can say the same thing in our experience. You always get more out of those experiences than they do.
That's very true. Karen
people are some of the most loving and happy people you'll ever meet. So it's totally double-sided.
It's very much so. And I think that's it, man.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming on.
We'll
be talking to you again soon.
Yeah, happy to do it. Thanks, Zane.
Yeah.
Okay, tilo falaki.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, and this was our season finale, and I am thankful for everyone who helped us in this preparing this episode and this season of The Plight of the Karen People. And we will be back with a season 2 soon, hopefully with more interviews and more content, and I am grateful and thank you.